All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. Damn, I'm just noticing that suit.
Clean up in this time.
That dude.
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if Russell Westbrook is becoming as toxic as Carmelo Anthony. But we start with the NFL. There's only one man in the entire National Football League with an ego so out of control that he would use the number one overall draft pick on a quarterback barely tall enough to ride the roller coasters at Disney World. John Gruden. I believe the Raiders coach has set his sights on making history. He wants to be the mad scientist who discovers the QB who breaks the NFL draft mold, Kyler Murray. The bite-sized Heisman Trophy winner, the fleet-footed Flutie, the Major League Baseball center fielder determined to cash in as a franchise NFL quarterback. John Gruden and his right-hand man, Mike Mayock, emptied their draft war room last week, kicking out their entire scouting department so that the Raiders' draft plans won't leak. It's a smart move when you're planning something bold, crazy, history-making, such as trading up to select an undersized quarterback with questionable intangibles. The NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reported on Monday that Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury, the man allegedly determined to attain Kyler Murray, has been very impressed with what he's seen from Josh Rosen so far. And ESPN draft guru Todd McShay said on Monday, John Gruden loves Kyler Murray, I'm told, and does not necessarily love Derek Carr, I'm told, which is going to be the interesting thing to see. It may not play out in this draft, but I think it's at some point it's going to come to an end between Carr and John Gruden. Clearly, John Gruden would like things to end this Thursday, day one of the NFL draft. Gruden wants to take fleet-footed Flutie. He wants to leave his stamp on the great game of football the way the other great coaches did. Bill Walsh created the West Coast offense. Bill Belichick built a machine around Tom Brady. Chuck Knoll built the steel curtain. Don Shula won the most games. Bill Parcells is the ultimate tough guy players coach. What is John Gruden's reputation? Chucky face? In the John Gruden QB school, which is a TV bit he did on ESPN. There's no hard substance to the narrative that Gruden is a QB whisperer as a head coach. Rich Gannon advanced to the Super Bowl and won the league MVP award the year after Gruden left the Raiders. Gruden's quarterbacks in Tampa were Brad Johnson, Brian Greasy, Chris Sims, Bruce Gradkowski, and Jeff Garcia. Gruden didn't fix Derek Carr last season in Oakland. Gruden wants to legitimize his reputation in Oakland. He sees himself in Kyler Murray. 30 years ago, Gruden was a 5'10" backup quarterback at the University of Dayton. He was the holder for field goals and extra points. Gruden told Sports Illustrated in 2002, "The most disappointing thing in my whole life is not being able to be anything but a ham and egger as a college football player." I'm telling you, the Arizona Cardinals have the perfect sucker willing to pay max value for the right to draft a quarterback with all the wrong measurables. Maybe fleet-footed Flutie is really the next Russell Wilson. That's a possibility, but it's a possibility a man with less ego would explore in the second or third round of the draft, not at the very top, where Nick Bosa can be had without fear of buyer's remorse. Kyler Murray is John Gruden's Moby Dick. Chucky is going to get dragged to his death by the end of this. All right, joining the desk now, a couple of former Washington Redskins stars, D'Angelo Hall and LeVar Arrington. LeVar, welcome.
Hi, guys. How y'all doing?
No ring crew up here, boy. Look at these franchises we represent.
My bad. Wow. We'll start with you.
Yes, sir.
Would it be a mistake for John Gruden and the Raiders to go all in for Kyler Murray?
Oh, absolutely. It'd be absurd. If you think about it, the ego you're talking about, Chucky, how you do it again? That ego can be satisfied by actually staying pat, keeping Derek Carr, who was a former MVP, but has not looked...
Candidate.
Yeah. Former MVP candidate, looked nothing like that since the injury. And not even last year did he look like an MVP candidate in rehabilitation with Chucky. But Chucky is smart to play it that way versus going out there and risking his four draft choices he has in the first 35 picks. Just like my wife, when we go down Rodale, she's like, "Ooh, this bag is nice, right?" I was like, "How much it costs?" Every time, "How much it costs? What's the price tag?" The price tag of getting Kyler Murray, too excessive. So therefore, I'm not looking at it from that scope, especially with the ego play. Fix Derek Carr. And that's going to be a story that gives you the validation of being the quarterback whisperer versus risking everything for Kyler Murray and then rolling the dice and hopefully he hits.
See, I disagree with you. I'm all about drafting Kyler Murray if he falls to you, because you can move Derek Carr, you can get some value for him. What is that value? I don't know what that'll be yet. But you know you can get some value for him. You then have a quarterback who's not demanding the kind of salary that Derek Carr is demanding, and then you can put more pieces around him. It's probably not going to fix your team this year, but moving forward, I can see the big picture.
Fall to him. Dave, what about go all in and go up
and go up and get him? See, to me, that's not the plan. That's to me, you're not going to.
They kicked everybody out of the draft room.
You're right, but I'm not trading away that draft equity that I've built in getting rid of guys like Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper. Those were really good football players, and you have to justify getting really good football players to replace them. And I just don't see the value in bundling up some picks to move up three spaces to go get Kyler Murray.
So you do agree with me.
Especially if.
You do agree with me, because he's not falling to the Raiders. There it is.
I disagree. I think he could. If the Cardinals don't pick him number one, I don't see nobody else going to move up to go get him.
Go all in for Kyler Murray.
You want me to go? So I'm going to go all in on disagreeing with both of you guys, all right? Here's what I'll say. First, let's start with ego, right? John Gruden has a Super Bowl. He does have a ring. We started off the show, we're the ringless ones. John Gruden actually does have a Super Bowl ring. He has proven that he can have success at the NFL level. That's why he's been given the opportunity to go and coach the Raiders at this moment in time to begin with.
$100 million contract, right.
If you're going to come in and be the guy that they're bringing you in to be, do it your way. I don't think that's necessarily connected so much to ego rather than being connected to sensibility of what it is you want your ultimate end result to be. If his goal is to build the type of team that he wants to build to win, then he needs to have the confidence to be able to make those decisions to go do that. If that's moving up to the number one pick to bring in Kyler Murray, then that's what it is. Now, with that being said, can he justify doing those things, the draft equity with Amari and with Khalil Mack? Can he justify that by not wanting it to work with Carr? That remains to be seen. But the reality of it is if you've been brought in and you've been paid to do a job, you bring in Mayock, you feel like Mayock can do a great job. I worked with Mayock. I think Mayock does a fine job of evaluating talent. If they feel like this is what they needed to do, and you get rid of a quality guy in McKenzie as the GM, the team has not had success. Regardless of who's been there, mm-hmm. Khalil Mack, Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, this team has not transitioned into being an elite team in the NFL. Why not try something different? That would be my thought process.
I just think, to me, it would be crazy because I don't want – honestly, goodness, in that I don't want to be the first person. I went and looked last night and this morning at
some people enjoy being the first person. I'm just saying, honestly.
I don't know. I disagree with that as well.
Okay. Not everywhere.
Practice makes perfect. Anyway, so I'm just going to say, Kyler, I don't want to be the first guy to draft the undersized quarterback. Russell Wilson went in the third round appropriately.
Right. But
Doug Flutie went in the 11th round.
What about Drew Brees? What about Drew Brees?
Drew Brees didn't go number one overall. He went the second round.
So we've learned from the past then, right?
Yeah.
Why pass on a Drew Brees or a Russell Wilson if we know?
If you're telling me you're not going to draft Kyler Murray just because he's 5'10",
yeah.
Has nothing to do with the way he plays the game.
No.
His arm strength.
I can't do it.
Don't look at Doug. He's no better than Doug Flutie. He runs better than Doug. That's it.
Don't do that.
I like where you're going.
Doug Flutie won the Heisman?
To me.
Preach,
yeah, he did win the Heisman. I played with Doug Flutie, and he was a Pro Bowl level player with us in Buffalo. Flutie Flakes. I mean, it was a mania when Doug Flutie hit in the NFL.
86 touchdowns in his career.
Oh, I'm not going to. Look, I'm just going to say skills because he hasn't proven anything at the NFL level.
I mean, what is
he has a greater arm than Doug Flutie in terms of just in the pocket and that press. This is a baseball arm. And then this is Michael Vick's mobility, man. Respect that. You combine those two things, the only thing you can.
He's still 5'10".
He's still 5'10", right.
They don't do that at the quarterback position that high. Michael Vick was a 6-footer that went number one overall.
That's being real, like, 6 foot. I mean, 5'11", maybe. That's generous.
I mean, I'm just saying you're acting as though you know, it's almost like when people talk about the combine. What people don't really realize, the difference between a 4.4 and a 4.6 is not very much when you're talking about breaking up a ball as a DB. And so for me, I'm not taking a dude off my board if he runs a 4.6 if he actually plays fast and he makes plays on the ball.
Jerry
and
Rice
so for
had
me
a slow
to just
40.
Look at a dude who's 5'10 and think he can't play, everything I see about Kyler Murray tells me he can play football.
Right.
I don't care if he's 5'10. Now, if he's 5'8, 5'7, okay, maybe. But 5'10, 5'11, 6 feet, that's still all in that. He could put some cleats on and be 6 feet tomorrow. I mean, so to me, that really doesn't matter if he's 5'10. If he can play football, I want him on my team.
And I'm just, you survive in this business when you got a layup like a Nick Bosa, like the defensive lineman out of Alabama, Williams. Take those layups.
See, I think
those guys are going to, there's no question.
So you want to play safe.
That's hard.
But
that's
that high, not, don't need to play safe.
He got a 10-year deal, though, with. He don't need to play safe. He don't care.
Well, we've known that by his moves so
far. Yeah, exactly.
When you talk about Khalil Mack and others. So
exactly.
Now's the time not to make waves if you're going to make a potential lateral move. Like, you got to really think that Kyler Murray is going to hit, not just hit for top pick, but hit for the other picks you may have to give up to get to that top
pick.
Because Arizona's playing poker. Now, I understand that 2 and 3 San Francisco and the Jets, they're not thinking about quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. He falls.
Arizona's playing some good poker right now. And that's why no one's in the draft.
But you don't necessarily have to play. You don't have to necessarily throw Kyler Murray to the Wolves immediately because you do have Derek Carr. You can give him the opportunity to develop and learn what it is that you want to do. See, here's the thing about the draft.
Man, what do you think the atmosphere in that building going to be if they keep Derek Carr and draft Kyler Murray?
That's up to Jay Gruden or John Gruden. That's up to John Gruden to make sure he manages that.
Right now.
I'm telling you right now, there is no such thing as an easy layup in the draft. No such thing. Every single person that gets drafted has to go in there with the same state of mind, which is they have to start all over and reprove themselves all over again. I came out as the number 2 highest rated draft pick in the draft. I barely played my rookie season. And the reason why is because when I came in, my philosophy going into it was, okay, I'm the top guy. I'm going to get this opportunity and I'm going to learn on the job. Whereas the guy that was in front of me, Greg Jones, who came out of Colorado, a seasoned vet, did more little things as a vet that I didn't do coming in as a rookie, and it allowed for him to be able to maintain his job and really grow his value for when I did eventually get the job based off of whether it was my draft pick or my play, whichever one. But I was as sure a layup as it could have been coming into the draft. So I don't think that you get lost in, okay, the guy is 6'4" and he can run a 4.44 40 and can do this and do that. There's a lot of guys that are sitting on couches real quick that came in.
Bosa's not missing.
But there are numbers that matter, LeVar, but the numbers that matter to me are not combine measurables as much as what are you giving up in the process of attaining him. Think about it. You got 4 picks in the first 35. Mm-hmm. If they even call me and say, hey, it's going to take 1, 2, 3, like, what am I doing? I got Derek Carr here who has something in there because the guy was one of the top quarterbacks at one time. Redeem that.
You don't buy McShay's argument that John Gruden's already out on Derek Carr? I do buy that.
Oh, yeah, I buy that as well. But I also know that that's based on production. So you change your production, you change his mind. It's just that simple. You may not be in high favor for him, but at the same time, he's basing it on what he's seen. Show him something different.
They may find their value with dealing Derek Carr.
Yeah.
But
they're not going to just give it away.
Come on now. You've seen coaches decide on a narrative, and it doesn't matter what happens. They're not coming off that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, and coaches with big egos. And John Gruden, to me, has a big ego, and he's off Derek Carr. Derek Carr can do everything perfect this offseason in training camp. John Gruden's convinced he's not the right play. And I don't think it satisfies, and this is the second question, I just don't think it fully satisfies his ego as an innovator, the way he sees himself. Right now, as much as he's won a Super Bowl, John Gruden's known more for being a television broadcaster and Chucky face than being a great X's and O's guy. He's kind of like, John Madden won a Super Bowl, but he's known for television.
Yeah.
I think John Gruden wants to fix that, and I don't think Derek Carr does enough to fix that.
Look, the caricature is a little greater right now than the coaching in terms of what we think and respect. Yeah. I'm not going to go to ego play as much as I'm going to go, I doubt his talent evaluation. And I'm going to base it on last year. Once you get the 10-year contract, $100 million, and you know that you have patience on your side and you have a franchise, what are you going to do in the draft? And look at this draft. My God. Colton Miller. They called him Colton Piano because they were out there playing that dude. And it's sad to see it. Gave up the most sacks amongst all tackles. Third rounder, Brandon Parker. Respect, but you gave up the third most. P.J. Hall, interesting enough. And Maurice Hurst at the defensive line positions. He hit. Those are the two young guys that show flashes. But when your number one pick is Colton Miller, and we covering the draft last year, we're like, wait a minute. Colton Miller, there were question marks. Is he the best lineman at UCLA, let alone your number one pick? So Chucky doesn't prove to me that he knows exactly what he wants in terms of this franchise going forward in evaluation and talent acquisition. But in terms of the ego, the good thing is I got 8, 9, 10 more years with this franchise. So with much ego play as I want to exercise and flex, I don't have to do it right now. You have time on your side.
Yeah, I understand with having the time, but it still circles back. Like I said, the salary that Derek Carr garners right now, if you can move him.
Yeah, that's real.
If you can move him and you can have Kyler Murray fall to you, because like I said, you said he's not going to fall to you. Man, if if the Cardinals don't take him one and you don't hear any buzzing going about trading up between 49ers 2 and Jets 3, that's the perfect situation for them, him to fall right there to 4 for them, trade Derek Carr. I think you get a lot of value for Derek Carr, more than the Cardinals were going to get for Josh Rosen. And then, man, your salary, you are in a really good position salary cap-wise to bring in some other players to help change that culture.
Hey, guys, Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show.
Let's get to a big story in Cleveland where Odell Beckham Jr. is still reacting to the Giants trading him to Cleveland. OBJ retweeted an article from the well-known sports authority, Hot New Hip Hop.
Oh, yeah.
In the article, there are quotes from Giants general manager Dave Gettleman, who told NewJersey.com that he had not been a part of a team that went to the Super Bowl that had a culture problem. When asked if the Giants had a culture problem, Gettleman said, quote, not anymore. OBJ responded with 46 tweets after he retweeted the article, including these two, writing, quote, I'm not upset in any way about where I landed, but out of respect, what they did was crazy and beyond disrespectful. Wanted nothing but the best for my New York, but on to a new chapter, it's life. Ask any one of my teammates of who I was as a teammate and a man and a person. Yes, I'm a cancer to a place that's okay with losing because I want to win that bad. You're absolutely correct. Woo, boy, this is a hit dog, man, that just barked and barked and barked all through the night. And I think he's completely overreacting.
No.
First, let me just tell you why he is overreacting.
Tell me
46
why.
Tweets, God, Lord.
Yeah, 46.
Well, then that's part of overreacting.
It's the offseason.
Okay,
he was bored out of home.
But y'all notice, we all been in there before. You're adding to the mess by trying to clean it up when you respond, especially to that magnitude. So the beauty of social media is that's your channel, bro. And
that
if it's
your
channel, it's your Fox. It's whatever you want to call your channel. Respect it. But guess what? Stop playing reruns on your channel,
but
you're going back there trying to clean up something that ain't gonna never change.
But what was wrong about what he tweeted? What
the
was
content?
Wrong? Yes.
That it's redundant. It's the rerun of what he said before. And guess what? Minds don't change only on the fringes.
Okay.
People gonna believe what they believe, and Odell is just making it more.
But here's where I'll say Odell can do that. And here's where I say the statement of now that cultural problem is gone. There has never, ever been a player that has touched down in the National Football League like Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham transcended being a football player and became something more like a rock star. The cultural difference, the cultural deal that was gone after Odell left, I'm going to say is that Odell Beckham's brand was almost as big, if not bigger, than every brand connected to the New York Giants. The only thing not being bigger is the New York Giants brand itself. So getting rid of Odell Beckham meant that other people would have an opportunity to shine. A GM, a quarterback, a defensive running player, back. A running back, right? You got rid of somebody who overshadowed what the New York Giants had built their reputation on.
So you agree with Gettleman? They don't have a cultural problem.
I agree with it because well, now they don't have to deal with the stardom of Odell Beckham. But I disagree with saying that Odell Beckham was wrong or overreacted because his fan base is so big. There are probably hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people sitting there wanted to hear from Odell Beckham, and he's realizing that, and he gave them what they wanted.
Again.
And I don't think that's a – yeah, I mean, well, they want to hear from him.
Well,
I mean, keep giving it to him.
I think he had every right. Obviously, the 46 tweets is a little excessive, obviously. But when Dave Gettleman made that statement, he opened up the floodgates. He initiated that. To me, it wasn't a cultural thing in New York. It was we don't have a very good quarterback. We can't protect this. We can't protect the quarterback because the offensive line was trash. They started trading away defensive players. Jenkins got ran up out of there.
They went and partied in Miami.
Big fella got ran up out of there.
For a playoff game.
Harrison. No, so, yeah, they did that. But I'm just
not
saying.
Not the best look.
I'm just saying.
Nothing wrong with it.
Last year, that team should have went all in on a quarterback. They didn't. They got Saquon Barkley, who is a great player. But you can find running backs. You can find running backs easier than you can a quarterback. And so, to me, you know, for that GM to want to point the finger at other guys, he needs to be looking at himself, in my opinion, because he hasn't made the right plays.
He answered a question. The culture still is messed up.
You know what's funny? He took the bait, though, because he didn't even say Odell's name. Like,
but he wanted to.
But look,
he did it without saying it.
And you know what?
And we all know what those apply.
I could keep it behind this thinly veiled reception. Like, I'm going to say this, but you know what I'm really thinking.
Sure enough.
Odell, play the game then. Like, you ain't going to speak louder than when you get back on that field and ball out. Like, I don't understand why.
Come on,
you already set the record straight.
Let's look at how many followers the New York Giants has and that GM has on Twitter. Let's look at how many followers Odell Beckham has on Twitter. Right?
But are you speaking to your followers? Because your followers don't even doubt you.
I think, but,
so who you speaking
but
to?
That's the point.
Who
but
you speaking
that's the
to?
Point.
I mean,
but that is the point.
No, that is a great point.
But the thing about it is, he's talking to
the people that don't believe you.
No.
They ain't changing their mind.
No. I can still continue to talk to the people that believe in me, and I could say I could use 46 tweets. I could use one. I could use three.
Right.
I could use as many as I want. You know why? Because I built my own built-in group of followers and buyers
and
believers.
How'd you get the superstar? What ignited that?
One catch.
The one catch, right?
One catch.
Was that on the field? Yeah.
That was.
So, Odell, keep being Odell, and everybody's following. You think we following you because you got tweet game?
But that catch propelled him to a different place.
Now, it did.
It transcends being on the field with Odell at this point. Odell is with musicians. Odell is with movie stars.
Oh, he's mega big.
Odell is traveling abroad and doing things that are much larger.
Oh, he's a superstar.
And you know, we had a problem with Ocho Cinco when he became that guy, right?
You keep reading these guys that never win anything, but continue.
All right, that's fair.
That's the company
I can relate, right? I can relate to those guys. But Odell has a brand that is so large, he's may not have a Super Bowl ring, but he got that ring off of the field.
But let's be real. He's winning in the celebrity. Reason they aren't winning Super Bowls?
No.
The
bad quarterback
for
play
anything,
is the primary reason, in my view.
Poor leadership.
For
as soon
all
as Coughlin
the
left, they lost
Beckham,
it.
Can we say that this dude does not compete every time he steps on the football field?
He does compete. But there are superior ways of competing.
I mean, he kind of reminds you of Russell Westbrook.
And there are
in a sense of sometimes
compete.
it's that personal thing that kind of gets in the way of
being
able to play. But
isn't he allowed to be upset? You went from New York
to
Cleveland.
You're right.
I might have tweeted 100 times.
He should be.
I'm in Cleveland
because
now.
Because at the end of the day, he went back
I'm not in New York.
This is like, I'm not mad about where I am. I obviously like that team, and I can't wait to be a part of that team.
He's lying.
But how disrespectful was it?
He's lying.
He said, how disrespectful was it?
It was.
To pay a man that y'all went all these back and forth, if he's going to be a part of this team. Is he not? Is he not? Bam, you pay him, he's going to be a part of this team. Bam, him and Saquon's relationship and the rest of the guys in that locker room, Sterling Shepard, and then to run him out of there? Oh, my
God.
Hold on. How disrespectful
crib,
is that?
And then all of a sudden, I'm following hot new hip-hop.
You
I'm
right.
Like, oh, they talking about me? Oh, really? And I hear, and I read it, and it says cultural thing. And I'm gone from there? You know what I'm not going to feel? That he talking about me unless he put his name, put my name on it. Like, all of a sudden, like you said, it's the hit dog. It's like, oh, they still talking about me. But they ain't said your name. So why you want to jump into something that they ain't calling you out for?
He does.
Jay-Z made a song.
New York City.
You know, you lost one. I
mean,
if you're saying you made Odell, then make another Odell. That's all. You're not going to have another Odell Beckham for a long time. And even in the market of the New York Giants.
But if you're walking around looking for fights, you can always find one.
But
if they ain't calling you out, if they ain't saying my name, bro, I got other things to show that I'm a superstar and I'm
He's
living a different
in
existence.
Cleveland.
And we all know what
nobody's going to care what happens in Cleveland.
And so here's the deal, LeVar, and this is what Gettleman's talking about. This is what I believe. He's going to be a problem in Cleveland. He's going to infect their culture.
Well, it's already
with his
infected.
Drama. With his drama. And again,
Cleveland's
he's too
already
emotional. He can't control himself. Look, man, Dave Gettleman made one little comment. And it took 46 tweets. You up
but
all night tweets.
It's Twitter, though.
I disagree. He's not interviewing.
I was a cancer in the locker room early in my career. I was a knucklehead. I would cuss coaches out in a heartbeat. But if it was one guy, God rest his soul, Keon Carpenter. He played at Virginia Tech. He played
Buffalo with me.
In Atlanta with me. If he came over and said, hey, 2-3, tighten up. I'm tightening up, period, because of the respect I had for him. I see the same thing in Jarvis Landry. That might not have been the best spot for Odell Beckham in terms of the city and just everything else, marketing and making your brand, all this. But to be around a guy like Jarvis Landry that he respects more than anybody else, treats him like a brother, I guarantee you won't have a problem. I'm saying it right now. You won't have a problem with OBJ.
Cleveland has to stop being a problem.
Take that out to Vegas. Joining the show now is Fox Sports NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Rick Buchert of Bleacher Report. All right, let's talk some NBA. Sponsored by Toyota. Let's go places. The Thunder won't be going anywhere for a third year in a row if they lose to the Blazers tonight. Russell Westbrook is coming off a horrible game, 4 in which he went the entire second half without scoring a field goal. There's an interesting parallel developing between Westbrook and his former teammate, Carmelo Anthony. Both Westbrook and Anthony signed massive contract extensions when they turned 30. Both are known as offensive disruptors who don't elevate their teammates, and both are well known for a lack of postseason success, especially recently for Westbrook. The question here is, all right, Noah.
Saucy over here.
Russell Westbrook become as toxic as Carmelo Anthony?
No. He's in a more protected place than Carmelo, who became bullseye for all the targeting and people just attacking him. Sometimes with good merit, but look, the effort that Russell Westbrook exudes and the loyalty he showed to his small market.
To the contract they get.
Call it what we want. You get paid somewhere else too and you didn't take it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's going to protect them in this situation. But there are obvious parallels you already outlined though. But I think because Carmelo at time was questioning effort, certainly was
that's
questioning
true.
Loyalty. And he chose the money elsewhere in the biggest market we have versus Westbrook took a lot of money to stay in the smallest market. I think that's going to be the difference.
There's no comparison. And toxic is still even a strong word for Carmelo. Carmelo just wasn't as good as his contract demanded that he be.
You can have him for a bag of peanuts right now. Nobody wants him, Rick.
That's fine, but that doesn't necessarily make him toxic. It makes him a difficult fit because he's a star. He's a classic star who doesn't know that he's not a star anymore. Grant Hill made that adjustment. Jason Kidd made that adjustment. Allen Iverson did not make that adjustment. Could have still played in the league much longer. Carmelo Anthony could be in the league. Mm-hmm. Last I checked, he was a 16-point-a-game scorer for Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
He can still play.
He's toxic.
And Russell Westbrook. Whoa! Westbrook is not a ball stopper. He is in shape. The comparison here is nutty. I mean, look, has he struggled in the postseason? Yes. But if you're leading the league 3 years in a row in assists, don't tell me that you don't make your teammates better.
Who would trade for him right now with that contract and the fact you know it's hard to win big with him? Nobody would trade for
Lakers.
Russell Westbrook.
Nobody?
The Lakers.
Lakers would trade for
the Lakers.
Him.
I know the Lakers would.
Heck yeah, you know them.
And he's playing with LeBron James.
And he's box office.
You know what? I'll tell you this. Mm-hmm. There's another team out there, a GM. I had this conversation over the weekend. Would take him that has the opportunity in another major market.
Mm-hmm.
He can't tell you.
I can't name the player Russell Westbrook's made better.
Steven Adams.
Oh.
He's Nerlens Noel. Steven Adams should be a star.
How's he gonna be a star?
Because they need to be feeding this guy in the post. They should have been developing.
But he's not a feeding post player. He's better in the pick and roll. Yeah. He can roll to the basket and then
seal.
Let's talk Westbrook. I'm going to take it a step. I think the parallel here is the contracts and getting stuck with Carmelo's contract and Westbrook's later on. But to me, he's more in the conversation of Allen Iverson, okay? Because the biggest thing with Allen as he got older, because he didn't conventionally play the point guard position, as he got older and went to Memphis, went to Detroit, went to Denver, he wasn't as athletic, he couldn't get by guys, and he wasn't playing the point guard position like a point guard. Yeah. So now he became a liability. Now teams looked at him and said, well, we don't really want to pay you or use you in this capacity at the two-guard position. Because we can get younger and someone else. Because Allen never accepted the fact that playing point guard was more than just scoring, okay? It was the mental aspect. Now, I will say that under Larry Brown, he started to get it a little bit more with Larry. Once he got divorced from that.
Go back to Westbrook, though.
Okay, here he is. So Westbrook is the same way because he's not your prototypical point guard, okay? The question for me is on the back end of it. What happens when that intensity, that athleticism goes down.
Mm. But wouldn't you say
and they're
that
paying him $47 million for one season.
But here's the distinction with Allen. Allen never tried to make that shift. I saw in Russ Westbrook this year try to make that shift.
But you know why he made that? Because he was able to have another player like that. Allen caught it on the back end with Carmelo in Denver. But he wasn't the same Allen Iverson. In Philly, they specifically built, and I was there his second year, Larry's first year. They built the team around him to have complementary players 100%. So AI can do his thing. It basically brought in Eric Snow to sometimes put Allen off the ball. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen that with Russell Westbrook.
He won't allow it.
No.
He did early on.
Well, a little bit, but he won't allow it because, I'm going to go back to this, Billy Donovan, Scotty Brooks, they're not the kind of coaches that demand that.
Mo Cheeks
is assistant coach. That had nothing to do with it. The head coaches don't demand that kind of discipline from, and they don't require him to do certain things. They don't put an onus on him that Larry Brown did.
Okay. He's got a huge contract.
But
he's uncontrollable.
He's
Frankenstein.
Let me tell you something. Pat Riley, I'm going to go back to this. Popovich, I don't care what kind of contract you got. You still got to answer to those two. I don't care what contract you got. So it depends on who's in that first seat.
Okay, but Jim, admit this. And I know y'all.
You telling me to admit it already?
No, admit
I know, right? Objection. Lead the witness.
Lead the witness. I'm going to tell you what you're admitting.
Sustained.
Admit this. Was there a coach that could ever control Allen Iverson?
Yeah, Larry Brown.
Oh, stop it.
He controlled him. You can't control that kind of person on everything they do. But you can have him grow in areas that he didn't grow before.
For a moment.
But that's
Larry
what he
Brown
did.
Okay, let's pull apart the parallels and stay right here on this topic.
One, Phil Jackson said it best. There's nothing more difficult than coaching an aging star. Because when you're going down the hill, you're not necessarily thinking you're going down the hill. You think you're plateaued. Mm-hmm. If you look at Carmelo and his impact of going to the Knicks in that trade, they did, after his first year when they won 54 games and Coach Woodson, they didn't win more than 37 games again, ever. Whereas you look at Westbrook and what they're doing to OKC, say their first round exits post-KD, they have not lost fewer than 45 games ever. In a loaded West, this is still a team that's going out there and a sixth seed. So I think the impact won't ever be comparable if you talk about Westbrook.
Here's the other part. They brought Derrick Rose in. They tried to bring some pieces in to reestablish what they could do with Carmelo Anthony. Mm-hmm. Carmelo Anthony wanted no part of that. This is the great distinction. This is the great distinction between Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony. Paul George stayed. They brought Dennis Schroeder in. Russ has tried to make room for them on the floor. Right. He's tried to make it work. Now, what's sad for me is it hasn't, which
Rick,
scares me.
Yes, as you're whether a journalist. It can. You're a journalist. You keep using the word try instead of Westbrook has made room for them. He has tried.
Right.
And again, you're using the word try for intentionally because you know it hasn't worked. Because Russell Westbrook is damn near impossible to coach. His contract's too enormous. He's got Oklahoma City by the balls. Mm-hmm. And he's uncoachable.
This becomes a matter of character. The question is, does Russ want to win or does Russ want to have it his way? And I'm
does
still...
Does he want to win his way? That's what
yes,
you're saying.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I've seen enough guys who have changed. LeBron James being the biggest example. When he went to Miami and they lost the first year, mm-hmm. he realized, I'm going to have to play a different way. I'm going to have to play below the free throw line. I'm mm-hmm. going to have to stop shooting threes. I'm going to buy into the system and find out how to get this done. And they did. So I don't want to take it away from Russ. I don't want to take
Russ
away the possibility
you're right.
that Russ would
versus,
say.
Did Russ pull this when Carmelo was sidelined and Lynn's sanity was going on, laughing at it if you want. It was buckets. You know what Carmelo was like? Not on my
not
squad.
On my, yeah.
Right? Like
right, right.
Somebody who could be an asset for whatever value that is. I've never seen that from Westbrook. Like, we're going to pull in the same direction.
Okay. I agree. That is a distinction.
Okay.
But Westbrook has a problem. Look, we've identified Carmelo has a different problem than Westbrook.
Okay.
Westbrook has a different problem than Carmelo. And it's his anger. It's the emotion. The lack of control of his emotions. That's his kryptonite. And it's not getting fixed. And I was right there with Rick. I used to sit here with Colin Cowherd 3 years ago and argue about Westbrook. And I'm like, oh, he's too young. Don't give up on him. He can change. He can change. He can't change.
But here's the thing. See, to your thing about LeBron, when he went down to Miami, who was there?
Pat.
And okay, so you put an Eric Spoelstra in that wasn't as seasoned, right. But you had Pat.
No, you had Pat right behind you.
You had Pat right behind you.
Then.
Okay? You haven't, again, we haven't seen that with Agreed. OKC.
Agreed.
We haven't seen somebody in that seat
Agreed.
That done, that Agreed. Has that level
here's the,
of control.
Here's the challenge on that. They're few and far between.
I know.
I don't know who you're going to get to bring in there to do it.
But I'm saying, but you can't say he can't do it if you haven't seen it.
Well, how about just give in to Billy Donovan and try it his way? Just try that.
Billy Donovan's got to ask for that.
Exactly.
D'Angelo Hall and Jim Jackson are back with us.
Uh-oh.
Time to get anti-social.
Another clip going.
right.
All right, Darnell Smith, yes, our social media manager. Big Swole is in the house. All right, Darnell, what's popping out in Twitter streets?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off in the NBA. Uncle Jimmy's best friend, Charles Barkley, advised Joel Embiid to start swimming to help out with his conditioning, but Embiid was not with it. Take a listen.
I'm scared of water. Okay. I don't know how to swim.
So for cardio, it's just bicycle. It's like bike, basically.
Nah, even the bike. The only thing that gets me in shape is basically playing basketball.
Are you guys surprised by this?
I am because I've never understood, and maybe I just came up in the wrong era and the wrong neighborhood. We all swim, and so there's this whole thing like black people don't swim. Man, we used to go to West Montgomery Park, Douglas Park, and go swimming in Indianapolis, and then we moved into a neighborhood with our apartment where they had a swimming pool. All my cousins would come over. Everybody would swim. I've never understood this.
No, I actually understood this. I actually took part in a charity tragedy that happened down south a couple years ago. youngsters were drowning and the adults couldn't swim, end up jumping in just because it's the youngsters and they just had to do something. Everyone drowned. I swam a mile in the ocean to bring awareness to this issue. Unfortunately, the numbers don't support that. Our people don't swim, in part because in the neighborhood, a lot of times, we don't see swimming pools everywhere. There's that big rec pool, Jesse Owens Park, but then you know what? That's it, one for the whole neighborhood. And I'm glad that he brought this up, even though it's lighthearted, there is a deeper message, man. It's a life-saving skill. Drowning. This ain't like bike ride. Everybody riding a bike, but nobody know how to swim. It's like crazy.
Now, I started swimming when I was young. I loved this. I remember one time we had a flood in the neighborhood. We were swimming in the flood. In the neighborhood. Because we wanted to swim.
Those are puns.
You know, but I'll say this. So Joel stepped up. He said that he rides the bike to get in shape. I said, bro, you ain't in tip-top shape with that bike.
Nah, he said he don't ride the bike. He said he don't do nothing but play basketball.
Oh, well, yes, right. Play basketball. Yeah. That ain't helping either. You might need to change that workout routine.
Yeah, a little more. I grew up in Virginia Beach, so I know how to swim. Right. We all know how to swim.
Black people need to learn how to swim.
I'm gonna tell you that's a great workout for him.
Come on. No, I don't know. Our high school, you couldn't graduate unless you passed the swimming class.
That's at Columbia College too. Same here.
That's the way it was. The only thing I didn't like, though, honest to goodness, man, they made us wear Speedo trunks.
Can we get that picture? Come on, let's get that picture.
Just graduate with us. Let him go.
I want to see this.
Graduate him.
Yeah, right. Did they have y'all do that?
No, we had some basketball shorts on. We tied the drawstring. You tripping, Whitlock.
That's the way it was, man.
My cannonball game was wicked.
All right, next time y'all go to a pool party in the spot, just take a poll of who can swim and who ain't. You know there's nobody in that water.
Hold up, black women would be like, man, I ain't getting my hair off. I ain't messing my hair up.
Come on, man, don't act like that real. Next. Moving on to Whitlock's favorite show, The Shop, where Uninterrupted posted a video showing the guests featured on their next episode, and it's packed with nothing but stars. Some notable names that stood out were Texans wideout DeAndre Hopkins, teammate Lonzo Ball, and their token white guy, Seth Rogen.
Man,
you know they had to get one. So who would you guys like to see on The Shop?
Oh, wow.
Jimmy Iovine's in there as well in that picture.
I think that's major.
I got no recommendations for the show.
What?
Oh, you got to go on there and just agree with LeBron.
No.
LeBron, you know
who I got?
What's that?
44th. Obama.
Oh, that would be great.
All day, 44. Put him on.
What would be better, TV, 44 or 45?
He ain't coming, first of all. I don't know, though. He might be the kind of dude that just walk up in there and be like, what?
Yeah.
What's up?
I love their casting. Like you said Obama. Other than that, I mean, we reach.
I mean, I want to see Will Smith.
Okay, yeah.
I like Will Smith.
I just need their casting. Either give me two white dudes or give me none. Like, this whole one, like, just the one white. And he usually turns into the moderator every time.
Yeah. He moderates the whole conversation.
Why are you taking over here? You the only one here. Like, can we get some more in here?
All right, y'all. Let's talk NFL draft.
Yeah.
We all know the infamous Wonderlic test administered at the NFL Combine, which includes 50 multiple choice questions that prospects get 12 minutes to answer. Well, the results came in for some of the top QBs in the draft, and Kyler Murray scored a 20, the lowest score amongst his peers. So it seems like more and more red flags continue to pile up for Murray. But just to give you guys some perspective, Mahomes scored a 24, and Baker scored a 25. So is this really a big deal?
No. Dan Marino scored a 13.
15.
But it is, it's something. They keep doing the test for a reason, so there's something they read into.
Bradshaw scored a 16, so, I mean, some greats have scored low. Your boy, Jeff George, right?
Hey.
What? That high school? Y'all talking about y'all swimming. Let's talk about y'all books. He scored a 10? You get 10 for your name.
Man, that Wonderlic has nothing to do with playing football.
Thank you. What you get, a 9?
Nope, I got a 27.
Go look me up. What you get? I got a 35 and didn't finish.
Show the paperwork.
You dropped it. Hey, but hold up. Deshaun Watson got a 20. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's all perspective.
Yeah. Man, you just got to do the math first. That's the first issue. Most guys be doing the reading comprehension.
I took the test online and got a 17.
You and Jeff George.
Navigational skills on how you get through the show is in question, brother.
You and Jeff George.
All right. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
All right, so Marcellus, we saw you post this video of your son going face to face with a gorilla at the zoo.
Oklahoma drill.
And the gorilla ran away. He wasn't, your son wasn't even scared, man. So it made me want to ask you guys, what's the biggest fear that you've ever conquered?
That's a great one. I would say this, it's weird because most of my fears, I'm still challenged by them in some degree, but one I actually conquered, I remember like in high school when I was working out and you trying to be great, but you working out doing extra stuff in front of all your friends. So they sitting in the stands just laughing at you, like you doing extra reps by yourself, running gashes by yourself, doing all this stuff. And I remember it was a real fear, like, I don't want to go 100% because they're going to clown me if that's all I got. And I remember finally just one day saying, I got to go for broke no matter who out here clowning me, joking. And that was like the latest fear that I felt like I really overcame because everything else I'm still struggling with, bro.
Mine was, you know, I do want to skydive one day just to see that. I do want to do it. I got to trust a dude that's on my back to make sure, you know, that parachute go open.
Right.
You know, but I think my biggest fear was failure when I got hurt. Was getting back on the court and trying to assume my career the way it was. Mm. And then kind of letting it go that I wasn't going to be the same player that I was before my injury. That right there was so hard mentally on me. Because I'm not scared of a lot of other stuff, but that right there was a challenge mentally for
me. You weren't the old Jimmy Jackson.
No, I thought about that. When I got hurt, I jumped right back out there as if nothing ever happened. So, you know, that's interesting. I think my biggest one was when I first got in the league as a 20-year-old kid, I was kind of overwhelmed by just how fast and how big and strong everybody else was around me. And it wasn't until that guy mentioned Keon Carpenter sat me down and was like, look, you out here trying to do everything. Focus on what this defense is asking you to stop and take away and then go from there. And once he kind of opened my eyes to the bigger game of football as opposed to just trying to go out there and stop everything like I had been doing my whole career, it slowed the game down for me. And it made me feel like, man, I actually can have success in this league when I originally thought, man, I might be a bust. I was drafted 8th overall, and they killing me in practice. Mm.
I have actually not conquered any fears. I'm afraid of spiders, snakes, mice. And so the hardest thing for me to conquer, and y'all finna go nuts, too much information, but I'm very transparent. The hardest thing in my life to conquer, I pooped my pants until 4th grade.
The 4th?
Man.
What age
you, like, you just didn't like going to the bathroom. You just didn't like going to the bathroom.
You could not get me to come off the playground.
You could not. You was like,
could not get me to come inside.
I thought you was going to say wearing the Speedo.
I thought you were going to say wearing the Speedo.
It
was a combination.
A combination of both.
In
the pool. Whitlock was in the pool.
But
it was always something dragging behind him because he didn't want to get out.
You know what? Like a chocolate payday. I got to do this.
He definitely peed in the pool.
Oh, peed in the pool.
I ain't going to leave him out like that. That's my partner.
He definitely
peed in the bed till I was 13.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, for real.
You know what? I think I peed till I was about 12, but my problem was I would envision myself, I would dream that I was on this
show. Oh, yeah, I think I was about 8 or 9. I didn't want to get up. I did not want to get up and go to the bathroom. The bed was too comfortable. So you switching the seats real quick for your bed.
We get too honest.
I thought I was on the toilet.
Speak for yourself.
All of our mamas right now are like,
can you believe that?
Us like this. Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher are back. Let's return to the NBA. The Warriors are a win away from eliminating the Clippers and advancing to the next round of the playoffs. It's been an interesting series for Kevin Durant, who was ejected and fouled out in the first two games, but since then has been totally unstoppable. As usual, Durant's off-court drama has also grabbed the headlines, with his impending free agency being a huge topic, something that Durant feels like the media has made too much of, saying, quote, they need me. If I wasn't a free agent, none of this stuff would go on, right? None of this speculation about who I am, what's wrong with my mental, why am I miserable, why ain't I happy with life? Nothing. It started with the score, Bleacher Report, Rick Bucher, House of Highlights, all of these platforms that aggregate stories from big media companies like NBC and ESPN. It's so easy now to put your own spin because you have your own platform. So after a while, players are starting to see how so many random people want to run with their messages and spin it around. I think a lot of media companies are sad about that.
There's a lot of truth, actually, in what Kevin Durant just said.
Agreed.
Which kind of indicates, like, he's spending a lot of time evaluating the media. The question is he too obsessed with the media? And I think maybe a little bit. Anytime you can talk about the media with the kind of depth that me and Rick talk about the media, and you're a basketball player in the prime of your career, that may be too much.
I don't think he's obsessed because we don't see it connected to distraction or effect on the court. And I think that when we call him sensitive, I actually am amazed at his range. If you think about this range, this is a guy who will dig in them weeds and in them timelines and post and go low with the lowest. And then go out there and give you buckets. 38 points, won't miss his first 7 shots and silence the critics. It's the CEO of the Fortune 500 company who never misses his son's practice. Like, it's like, how you doing both of these things at the same time? And that's what's amazing about Kevin Durant. And he's the first athlete, I would say, unless you want to dig deep and say Charles Barkley, who really wore everything on his sleeve. And to me, Charles Barkley was sensitive. Because if I'm just going to throw you into a window because you said something, I'm sensitive. Man, maybe I'm hard, but I'm sensitive as well. He's the first athlete to wear it like this and it not affect his game.
I've told KD that I like this version of him more than I like the one in OKC. Because I always knew he had these thoughts. I always knew he had these feelings. But in Oklahoma City, it was he would never say anything. I appreciate this. Where he loses me is he's lost the high moral ground to criticize the media, and especially when it comes to stories and sources. He lost it with the burner account. He was not willing to put his own name on comments about the Oklahoma City Thunder. He was his own anonymous source. Once you've taken that approach, you can't complain about stories, about things being said. And by the way, the things that he said about Oklahoma City were things that were being reported and said by the media that he and other people in Oklahoma City took issue with.
Right.
So, and here's the other thing. He's jousting at windmills. It's not just the media covering him. It's the media at large where we've gone to sources. We've gone to lack of verification on information. He's complaining about something that is bigger than him, and he's doing it by pointing at specific journalists. Look, we're all subject to it. You're right. There's a lot that he said that's true. There's a lot that he said that I don't like about our business right now. But I went through it. He did a story with me for Bleacher Report. The word toxic. You talked about the toxic environment with LeBron. Now, he blamed the media, ESPN, NBC, some of those other outlets. They all aggregated it, and they just took the word toxic. Mm-hmm. It's a toxic environment around LeBron. KD said that. They took it completely out of context. I've experienced it, so I know what he talks about. But this is a larger subject than is going to be dealt with from the podium after a game.
And to your point, too, I think you brought up a good point in regards to him being accountable for what happened with his Twitter account or the fake one. So it's kind of hard to balance those two and say, well, it's fake over here, but yet you did it. I think the challenge always is that when sometimes when you deal with things that are out that are not real, that's when it irks you. I remember I was dealing with stuff in Dallas in regards to the whole Toni Braxton stuff. I used to laugh. People today still come up to me and talk about, and I'm like, bro, it didn't happen. Yeah. But yet and still people run
it
with
did,
it. No, it didn't happen.
Damn. I will
never
lie.
You
know what?
I've lost a lot. Hold on. But listen, you don't think that gave me credibility too? But it never happened. But yet people ran with it. No matter how many times we said something to do something differently, people didn't want to hear it. So I get the point in regards to an athlete like that that wants to control the narrative, but you can't control everything.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You voice it, but you do got to understand how to navigate through it at that level.
Sure.
You know, the blessing is everyone's influenced by Jordan, everybody that came after Jordan. The blessing is we're seeing KD wearing on his sleeve and living the moment right now instead of waiting for his Hall of Fame speech where all of a sudden everything unpours and the crying and the, like living the moment. And I love him for that.
That's I like point. KD. Mm-hmm. All right, before we go, I'd like to say a word or two about Jalen Ramsey, Tom Coughlin, and voluntary football workouts. 72-year-old Tom Coughlin's old-school approach to football isn't remotely outdated, out of place, or outrageous. He has every reason to be disappointed that Ramsey isn't attending the team's offseason training activities. Coughlin's Jaguars entered last season as the sexy pick to stop New England's dominance in the AFC. After a 2-0 start, the Jaguars lost 11 of their next 14 games. They didn't sniff the playoffs. You can blame it all on the poor play of quarterback Blake Bortles. That's easy and inaccurate. Whatever the cause, Coughlin is determined not to see a repeat in 2019. A repeat would likely cost Coughlin his job as executive vice president of football operations. Head coach Doug Marrone is in the same predicament. Jalen Ramsey isn't. Winning doesn't dictate Ramsey's future. He's 24 and extremely talented. Short of a catastrophic injury, Ramsey's going to be in the NFL the next 5 to 8 years, no matter what his teams do. The importance of winning is what separates Coughlin and Ramsey's outlook on voluntary offseason training activities. One guy needs to win to survive, the other doesn't. 2 years ago, Jalen Ramsey, Jacksonville's most talented player, attended OTAs, earned first-team All-Pro accolades, and the Jaguars won 10 games in the regular season and lost a heartbreaker to the Patriots in the AFC Championship. Last year, Ramsey skipped OTAs, finished the season as the 28th-ranked corner, according to Pro Football Focus, and Jacksonville finished the year 5-11. 5-11 has made Coughlin desperate and cranky. 5-11 has made Coughlin double down on the values that served him well throughout a 50-year career in football. Ramsey and linebacker Telvin Smith, another player who underperformed last season, are the only Jaguars unwilling to comply with Coughlin's command. Ramsey and Smith are smarter than everyone else. Or maybe they're just selfish and irresponsible. Maybe winning isn't important to them at all. Ramsey keeps stressing that he's spending time with his daughter and his family, and that's why he's not at OTAs. Is he the only player on the Jacksonville roster with a daughter and family? No one questions Ramsey's ability to help the Jaguars win this season. The question is he willing to give all he has to offer? The answer is no. Joined once again by D'Angelo Hall and LeVar Arrington, let's move to Kansas City, where the Chiefs have just acquired Frank Clark from the Seahawks for multiple draft picks. Seattle had just franchised Tad Clark, but in the aftermath of Russell Wilson's huge contract, it seems the Seahawks couldn't afford to keep one of the team's best defenders. KC has already signed Clark to a 5-year contract for $105 million,
Lord,
63 of which is guaranteed. So when I heard this, obviously,
I'm
a Chiefs fan, and my first thought was like, wow, this is great for Patrick Mahomes.
Mm.
And then I thought, oh, this is bad for Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And I could, as a Chiefs fan, the first thing I thought was, this is bad for Russell Wilson. I mean, or this is good for Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
But I'm just, how does it land? What's the stronger feeling? What does this say more about Patrick Mahomes' hopes, or does it dash some hopes for Russell Wilson?
Dude, it's actually the opposite. Just the flip. This is crazy. A lot of people hit me up too and said, make sense of this trade. I'm like, I'm going to try and make sense, and it may not make any sense. Here's the thing. This is bad for Mahomes. They try to address their defensive issues, 31st ranked last year, by going back in first, Honey Badger, respect that. But this move, Frank Clark, y'all already tied for first in the league with sacks.
But
so y'all, let's go lateral with this move in terms of impact. Only thing you can sell is, well, we're going to have a lead and he can get more sacks. But come on, man. This y'all first ranked in terms of pass defense up front. Now, this is good for Russell Wilson because we see him take the money, and usually that means we can't build a team around you.
Right.
Oh, just like in college, when you ain't got no money, you got to sell something. I sold CDs. You know what? Here's the commodity you're going to sell. We're going to sell these players that are valuable, but maybe not as valuable because this league is about offense. We need to be – if we're going to be a top four team, top four teams were all the top four scoring teams. Let's build with commodities by getting rid of a player that everyone else values, but now we're going to get a first and a second and build this team offensively. So it's a flip.
See, I think it's great for Patrick Mahomes, and it's great because – they have a new defensive coordinator, Spagnuolo. He's bringing a different style. They moved from a 3-4 to a 4-3. D4 is gone. You said they led the league in sacks. They did. D4 is gone. Justin Houston's gone. So all that pass rush bodies are gone.
Yeah.
Production is gone.
Yeah.
So you get a guy like Frank Clark in there who can play in your 4-3 defense. you get that defense better. You added, like you said, Tyrann Mathieu. You added Breshon Breed and a couple other guys, edge rushers and players like that on the defense. They know what this offense is going to be, and that's explosive. Mm. And they know they need to address the defense. And so to go out and make this kind of move, I like it.
With the price tag, I first like, and now, a second now, next year? Huh? Now, come on.
Frank Clark,
and 105?
I'm all about you getting your money. Huh? But, man, that's a lot of money for Frank Clark.
It's a lot, but I think they valued it and they weighted it off of what you're saying. Bring in Spags. Spags knows how to win. He also has a Super Bowl ring. I think he has two, as a matter of fact, with the Giants. You think about this, right? You bring in that pass rush. Does it help Mahomes more? Does it hurt Russell Wilson? You made the decision to pay Russell Wilson because he is the most indispensable player for a team in the entire NFL, if you ask me, all right? That defense has been losing its identity for a few years now.
Yeah.
So if you're going to see the value in Russell Wilson, who is the identity of your team, and that was Russ and the Legion of Boom and Beast Mode, right? Beast Mode's gone. Legion of Boom, gone. Mm-hmm. If you're going to rebuild the identity of the defense, rebuild the identity of the defense, right? So if we're unloading that and we're getting value, then you got value for the Seahawks and you kept a guy happy that is indispensable to your team. If you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you're one or two players away from winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you got to spend that extra amount of money to bring in a dude that's going to make the defense, which Spags can coach some defense. If you're going to bring in a guy and Spags says, I need that guy, he can make our defense better, put that money on it, because by the time you have to pay that $100 million, you may have won a Super Bowl or two.
May.
Justifiable.
May is the key word.
Yeah.
May. It's all that, right? Every single time it's going to be the possibilities of it.
But you lost a couple players to get one back. You gave
$100 million.
Dollars.
Woo! Uncle Jimmy's here. Thoughts so far on the show, Uncle Jimmy?
It's been quite disturbing, if I say so myself, nephew.
Uh-oh.
I'm sure Joyce got some words for you. First of all, let's just go on and get to this big dummy. It was a toss-up, but just the fact that you talking something about you in a Speedo, which damn near probably, I'm sure, made you look like you was running around naked. That wasn't cool, you big dummy.
You had a lot to choose from today.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. All right, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about John Gruden. Gruden wants to legitimize his reputation in Oakland. He sees himself in Kyler Murray.
That ego can be satisfied by actually staying pat, keeping Derek Carr. Chucky is smart to play it that way versus going out there and risking his four draft choices he has in the first 35 picks.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, what's your take on John Gruden?
Yeah. Man, let me tell you something. First of all, you can't pay Uncle Jimmy to come on here and badmouth John Gruden. Mm. John Gruden has a 10-year, $100 million dollar contract.
$100.
Guaranteed. All right?
He won.
Guaranteed.
He won.
So
what does that have to do with
Kyler? We can go to break now. You heard what he said. We done.
He won.
What does that have to do with Kyler Murray? I don't get it.
That part.
I'm just saying, hey, look, man, you sitting up here, you hating on John Gruden because he liked Kyler Murray, right?
Yeah.
Ain't that kind of hypocrisy a little bit?
Hmm?
I mean, look, let me say, look what we did here.
Oh?
Because he a 5'10 quarterback. John Gruden 5'10.
Yeah.
And so you got a problem with that?
That's not what I said.
A little
I
more.
I said he's a little obsessed. He sees himself in Kyler Murray.
An ego.
Okay, wait. Work with me real quick here, Merkulis.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you waste a whole bunch of draft picks to move up in the draft to get to get Darnell in the draft?
I knew you got to shoot that.
Didn't you spend a first round draft pick on Darnell because he grew up in your neighborhood? Because he played on your high school team?
Uh-oh.
Because he went to your college?
Oh.
Because he was a lineman?
Nepotism. Hit him.
And wasn't that your number one pick?
No.
Actually,
he was a draft pick. But yes, he was.
Yeah, you gave up draft picks for him.
He wasn't number one. He wasn't number one.
But hold up. Wait. Hold up. Hold up, small up. But who was the free agent that walked in and saved you? Han Chucky? Who saved you, big boy?
Who?
Who was the free agent that walked on and everybody said, who's the old man? Who saved your season? Who did you tell the L.A. Observer? What was the first thing they asked? Hey, boy, where you find this Uncle Jimmy at? Who saved the show? Who pulled? Why you saved me to the end? You know why? Because I bring your ratings up. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. You need people like me. You need me. You see those T-shirts? You know who did that? I did that. Uncle Jimmy did all of that. You understand me? You need people like me. You need me and Kevin Durant. You know why? So you can look us and say, there go the bad guy. Unlike Jason, who says say hello to his little friend. I be the bad guy. It's okay.
All right. Let's move to our approval rating here.
Oh, man.
We don't approve of you either, big boy.
He brought that back around, boy. He got me on his team. I got $5.
John Gruden is not a dumpster fire, but he's close. He's a 46. I've actually moved him up 2 points.
There you go.
Job performance, I've given him an extra point from a 5 to a 6. 17 all-time greatness stays the same. Moved him down a couple of points in character. I just, not a huge... Moving up 3 points in authenticity,
all right.
46.
Yeah, I had to move his job performance. He's scout team for you, but for me, a little more role player. This dude is playing poker to the point where he kicked out everybody in the scouting department. So that's, to me, that's a different play. So I moved you up in job performance, see how it plays out. But authenticity, he didn't give a damn how we thought about it, how it looked, how it landed. He's like, I'm going to do this. Respect to John Gruden. You are a role player. Let's see how it goes.
All right.
He my hero. Y'all can say what y'all
yeah,
want to.
Million.
Hey, Uncle Jimmy want one of them contracts.
Uncle Jimmy
I take a 1 year, $1 million. I take a 1 year, $100,000 contract. Right. How about that?